This is a Voyascape podcast. You can find all of our travel podcasts from around the world at voyascape.com.
You are listening to the Fromer's Travel Show. I'm your host, Pauline Fromer, and for the second week in a row, we are discussing the best places to go in 2026. To help me do that, I have the Fromer's Dream Team. Yeah. I have Zach Thompson, who is the managing editor of Fromers.com. Hello, Zach.
Hello, thanks for having me.
And I have Jason Cochran, who is our intrepid editor-in-chief at Fromers.com. Hey, Jason, what do you know?
Hey, let's talk best places.
Let's talk best places. Okay, I'm going to start. Let me just recap last week. If you missed it, you should listen. But we talked about Asheville, Patagonia Azul, which is a new massive park in Argentina that sounds spectacular, Oulu, Finland, Kruger National Park in South Africa, and Albuquerque. This week, we're going to start with the only country on the list. And we decided to feature this entire damn country because we wanted to reframe the way people go to Peru. In recent years, I mean, probably in the last 20 years, when people have gone to Peru, they've gone for one reason and one reason alone, and that is to see the iconic city, ancient city of Machu Picchu. But that has meant that it's just become overloved and a target, frankly, for anybody who's angry with the government there. There have been a number of actions in Peru that shut down the tourist train that goes to the gateway to Machu Picchu. And so people have been stranded there. Folks have had to change their itineraries at the last minute. It's been kind of a mess. And we've seen these actions many times over the last couple of years. But the truth is, Peru is much more than just Machu Picchu. There is so much to see and do there. As our author, Heather Jasper, who actually has lived in Peru for many years, told us when she pitched this idea. In fact, there is a place called Penico, which was a city built in 1800 BC, and it just opened to the public in 2025. So if you go to see these magnificent ruins, you will be one of the first non-archaeologists to see that spectacular ancient city. Even more spectacular, there's a place called Cuilap, which is a fortified citadel, and you actually have to take a gondola to get up to it, which Heather says beats the train that you take to Machu Picchu for thrills. It's really, really fun to arrive via gondola. This city is about from 500 AD, so a little bit newer, but it's in a cloud forest. It's known for bird watching because there is a really aptly named bird called the marvelous spatula tail hummingbird. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. I can picture a spatula-tailed bird.
Yeah, it's very evocative.
Right. And this is the only place to see it. And it was built by the Chachapoya, who were mountain people who were known as the warriors of the clouds because they fiercely resisted the Incas in the 1470s. Or you can go to a place like Ayacucho, which is a colonial city where you can go to contemporary artist studios, artists and artisans, and get a taste of contemporary Peruvian culture that way, and go to these extraordinary ruins left by the Wari people who were here from about 500 to 900 AD. There's also religious pilgrimages you can make, believe it or not. You can see where Pope Leo came of age as a church leader. It's a place called Chiclayo. He was named bishop there in 2015, and you can see what his life is like. There's great beaches to visit in Peru, and a lot of people go to try an ancient form of surfing. It was this reed built craft called Caballito de Totoro, and you can actually still surf the way the ancient Peruvians did. And for those who like mysteries, there are what is called the Nazca Lines, which are these very big lines in different patterns that nobody knows who put them there. As well, 60% of Peru is a rainforest with really extraordinary biodiversity, with eco lodges and river cruise tours where you can see pink dolphins, sloths, 52 species of monkeys, and thousands of different types of birds. And of course, there's Lima, which has become one of the top foodie destinations in the world, which has extraordinary shopping and nightlife and a very, very sophisticated contemporary scene. So we put in Peru as a country just to try and refocus people. Too many people are just going for Machu Picchu, and that's become problematic, as I said at the beginning, in recent years. It's time to start exploring the rest of this electric country.
I'm still stuck on the fact that there's a gondola to this ruin.
Yeah.
I mean, I had to take 26 miles of Incan stone steps to get to Machu Picchu. I think a gondola would be preferable. So it sounds like people who aren't up for doing a hike to Machu Picchu might be able to consider these places, and they might not have been able to before.
Although you don't have to hike to Machu Picchu.
Hike there or you take the train road combo that is problematic politically sometimes.
Right, right. What did you think of the rest of Peru? Did you see other places as well, Jason,
Cusco,
when you were there?
Sure. I want to see more of it because, as you were just hinting in what you were talking about, it's incredibly diverse. There's a lot going on. And, you know, we talk about the rainforest, but there's a lot of coastal traditions too. It's a groovy place. And I think the foodies discovered it, especially about 10 years ago, 15 years ago in Lima. But the rest of the country is still sort of, you know, ripe for discovery by Americans, I think.
Yeah. They invented ceviche in Lima, didn't they? And the pisco sour, there's a lot of great food options in Lima, for sure.
Gosh, I love ceviche.
I wonder if they invented ceviche. I don't know about that.
Well, they say they did.
They certainly do it well.
They certainly. Definitely. All right. Our next destination is in Zach's home state of Arkansas.
I am delighted we picked one from Arkansas, my home state. Been working on these since 2017. I don't think we've done an Arkansas one. But the selection is Hot Springs, which is in the middle of the state. It's about an hour's drive west of Little Rock. I grew up in the northwest corner. We thought of like Hot Springs as like the Sodom and Gomorrah because it's the resort area and it has a lot of like gangster history. Like Al Capone used to vacation there. There's a horse racing place. Bill Clinton spent his childhood there. So it's this great resort
area. Not in Hope? I thought he spent his childhood.
He was from Hope, but then when he was a young teenager, he went to Hot Springs. Like that's where he went to high school, I believe, when his mother married Roger Clinton. Anyway, but the reason why Hot Springs, it takes its name from the thermal feature. It's Arkansas's only national park, Hot Springs National Park. And it's mostly noteworthy for this famous thing called Bathhouse Row. And it's a string of historic bathhouses you can visit for a schwitz and for a soak. And needle showers, which are those things where the water comes at you from a whole bunch of different directions, you know, and in little jets. You can do those things where you sit in a little cabinet and just your head pokes out, you know, like an old timey. So if you want to do like old timey spa services, you can do that. It's the only national park that has a brewery on park grounds. They make a great IPA and a stout. And also it's in the Ouachita Mountains. There's great hiking. I worked on a story once on the most pet-friendly national parks, and it's the only one of the few where you can take a dog on every single hiking trail. So it's very dog-friendly, hike-friendly. There's Garvin Woodland Gardens nearby, which has this beautiful timber and glass chapel that our writer, Sarah Sekuloff, said looked like I came from Lord of the Rings. There's a gangster museum. There's a lot of history, a lot of quirky history, colorful past. A lot of fun stuff to do. And Arkansas is just a beautiful, perennially underrated state, in my opinion. I'm delighted it's on our list this year. My mother will be thrilled. Yes.
It's one of the three states I've never been to.
Are you serious? I get that a lot. A lot of people are always like, I've been to every state but Arkansas. And sometimes people just go to check it off of a list, you know, to have all 50 and some. It's an outrage, really.
But I was stunned because I was the one who picked most of the photos in the article. And I was stunned by how beautiful a city it is. I mean, yeah. The nature areas are spectacular. We actually start the entire article with a picture of a man hiking with his dog. Just looks, it looks idyllic. It looks like, I don't know, Colorado or Montana or one of those places that are known for their natural beauty. I had no idea.
Well, you know, the nickname is the natural state. They don't call it that for nothing. Whenever I'm in other countries, I'll often be like, well, this is almost as pretty as Arkansas. And I'll be like in Ireland and everyone's like, oh, shut up.
So have you ever been to the Running of the Tubs? I think that's what it's called.
No, but I wasn't that familiar with that event, but I think it sounds like a lot of fun. I guess what they do is they teams decorate these bathtubs and they're actually filled with water. I don't know if they have a theme every year or what, but teams decorate them elaborately. They're filled with water and then they run them down one of the central avenues in town. It's one of those like quirky traditions in town. It looks like a lot of fun.
Yeah. I wonder who first thought of that.
I know. So it seems like a tub got out of hand one day and then it became an event.
How does a tub get out of hand?
Good question. I don't know where that came from.
All right. So that is the next one, Hot Springs, Arkansas. And then we have a place in Greece that I'd never heard of before called Costa Navarino. Jason, take us there.
Yeah, this is a part of Greece that a lot of people don't go to. I think people are more used to the islands south and southeast of Athens. This is west of Athens, and it's considered part of the mainland. It's actually around the city of Messenina, and it's in an area of the Peloponnese. So it's sort of like a big landmass, maybe about a four-hour drive west of Athens. But you can get there directly on flights from Europe, or you can also take a ferry not too far away from the east coast of Italy. So there's a lot of ways to get there. And I think because it's sort of been off of the main up until now, it hasn't been a place where a ton of hotels have been built, but that's being changed very quickly. And a lot of luxury resort developments are starting to go in. Restaurants and other facilities are all starting to appear along this area. And in 2026, it's going to get a big boost, at least in terms of the international mindset, because Christopher Nolan, whose movies always get a lot of attention, he did Oppenheimer. He just shot a movie called The Odyssey there with Matt Damon and Zendaya. So I think there are people who are going to be like wondering, where was that shot? And it's around the Costa Navarino area. So we recommend that for people because people don't always want to go to the Greek islands. They're a lot of work. This looks like a little bit easier. You can just take plane and don't have to get on a ferry to be there. And you can have a giant resort experience that you can't always get in lots of other parts of Greece, which are much more boutique. Now, there are boutique hotels here that are even less than $100. But if you want that fancy experience with golf and spas, and there's a new tennis center with clay courts overlooking the Ionian Sea that opened in 2026, if you want that kind of experience, I know a lot of people do, this is a new part of Greece to look at that's not yet overrun with visitors. You'll be among the first to get in on it.
And like the Greek islands that you were just discussing, you look out at this perfect cerulean sea, and there are craggy mountains and olive trees and all of the beauty that you find in other parts of Greece, but less tourists, less development. And I gotta ask, so is Zendaya playing Penelope and Matt Damon, is he Odysseus?
You know, Oppenheimer, slip there. Nolan is famous for not releasing his scripts, even to his other actors in the show. So I'm not sure we exactly know what this is going to be and who's going to be playing what.
But it's based on the Odyssey, I'm assuming.
Yeah. We can assume this, but who knows? But anyway, the region has lots of other stuff to offer. Zendaya will not be there, you know. She's going to be hiking and waterfalls and rock climbing and mountain biking and ruins and all the things you expect from Greece without the traffic, which people don't expect from Greece but often encounter anyway.
Interesting. So there are ruins there. I didn't see photos of those. Interesting. Yep. Do you know what people they're from or what era?
No. I do not. Well,
the Mycenaean period, like Pylos, the town of Pylos is nearby, and it has Nestor, the castles of Nestor.
I don't know whose people that is.
Yeah. I remember Nestor from the Odyssey, from the Iliad.
Isn't he the old guy who gives the speech that cheers everybody up right before the big battle? One of the many big battles?
It's been a while.
Yeah.
I actually read that. Anyway, I read it a couple of times in high school and college for no good reason. All right. Well, since Zach is talking, we're going to keep going with Zach. And Zach, you are taking us to Jasper in Canada, in Alberta. And this, I thought this was a really interesting reason why we chose it this year.
Yeah. So this is another one kind of similar to Asheville, which we talked about last week, that suffered a pretty serious natural disaster in 2024. In the summer of 2024, there was a destructive wildfire that tore through Jasper and Jasper National Park in the Canadian Rockies. And when the area reopened for tourism for summer 2025, the pitch was kind of like, first of all, much of the pristine landscape that the place is known for, like the shockingly blue lakes, Banff has a lot of those too, which is also in Alberta, but the shockingly blue lakes, the incredible forested mountains and the Rockies, they're pretty much what you know of it. The glaciers remain unharmed from the fire, but also Parks Canada, which runs national parks in Canada and other tour operators nearby, sees this opportunity to sort of teach people about fire ecology and sort of press home to tourists the nature's resilience and sense of renewal and our kind of our responsibility to protect it. So there are these new tours and programming that shows off stuff like how wildlife adjust to wildfires and how the new flora, new plant life has emerged. And it gives you a chance to kind of see these areas as no one alive is seen them before because of the damage and as they continue to recover. And I did some calling around to make sure that these sorts of tours would be continuing into 2026. And everybody said yes, because they've been very popular and very interesting. And it gives a chance to sort of see that evolution and ongoing recovery as Jasper continues to make a comeback. And also there's a pretty exciting thing in the Rockies, the Rocky Mountaineer train company that everybody knows, you know, it's famous for the sightseeing trains. They're starting a new route in 2026 that just goes between Jasper and Banff, and it remains in the Canadian Rockies the entire time. Most of Rocky Mountaineer routes end up in British Columbia and Vancouver, but Vancouver is hosting one of the North American cities hosting the FIFA World Cup for soccer. Oh. So to people who want to avoid those crowds can just stay in the Canadian Rockies the whole time. And while you're there, you can extend your trip while you're in Jasper to go to places like the Columbia Ice Field, which is a huge glacier field. It's incredible. It's a really incredible region.
Not too long ago, Fromers reviewed the Rocky Mountaineer train. If you don't know, specially built carriages with giant domed clear windows, so it's easy to take pictures. It's a little expensive. It's a luxury product, but it is all inclusive, including alcohol. So it's an easy way to get around. And if you had taken the Rocky Mountaineer from Vancouver, you have to spend one night overnight in a city called Kamloops, which is near the border of Alberta. And if you just do the Jasper Banff product that Zach was just describing, you avoid that and you sort of stay entirely with this Edenic, beautiful, astonishingly gorgeous national park zone between Jasper and Banff.
So are you saying Kamloops sucks, basically?
it's like a kind of a quieter cowtown type of thing. It feels more Western than it does feel like you're deep in the Rockies with the trees and the lakes. So it's a completely different vibe. It's just an overnight. You have to get off the train. You don't spend the night on the train if you take the Rocky Mountaineer. So it's just one added step that some people, you know, that's great views on either side of it, but some people just don't want to go through all that. They'd rather stick to where their destination is.
And we should say that if you do, it is possible to cobble together a rail trip through that region by using VIA, which is Canada's answer to Amtrak there. It's much more affordable. It's not as luxurious and glamorous as the Rocky Mountaineer, but it is a cheaper option if you want to go through.
Or just go to the national parks on your own, of course. You don't have to do this.
Rent a car.
Fancy schmancy way of doing things.
Right. Absolutely.
And I think we should underline the fact that most people who go to Jasper today will not see the damage. I mean, there's still so much beauty there, but I think it is so smart and so much of the moment that they are embracing what is happening to many communities and trying to educate people about fire, about climate change, about what is happening to our world and the best ways of managing it. I think that's brilliant.
Especially as wildfires get more intense over the years. I'm sorry to step on you there. scientists say, as things go on, it's great to be armed with knowledge.
We mentioned Asheville last week as a place that is worth going to because it's being reborn after a disaster. And they, too, are talking a great deal about how to rebuild sensibly, like not on floodplains and better architecture and better infrastructure. So it's something that both destinations have in common, that their rebirth is actually also a re-education and they're living better now.
Yeah. No, I was so excited about that one. And the photos are just gorgeous. What a gorgeous place. Oh, my goodness. Another gorgeous place that Jason is going to discuss is in Fiji, Vitu Levi. Tell us about that.
You know, you said earlier that that Peru was the only place that was a country on our list. Technically, Vitu Levi is the largest island of Fiji. So it's what a lot of visitors to Fiji think of as Fiji. So this is a hedge, but we're talking about the main island, Vitu Levi of Fiji. One of the biggest reasons it's on our list is because it's often been kind of difficult to reach from North America, which is, of course, where we're based. But Fiji Airways is going to be flying from Vancouver, LA, San Francisco, Dallas, and Honolulu next year. So it's going to be so much easier to get there. And that makes a big difference because it's a long way away. It's sort of northeast of Australia and very west of the Galapagos Islands in the Southern Pacific. But it gives you that South Pacific thing that you want. You know, you want the reefs, you want the mountainous islands that are thick with jungle. But there's an interesting culture in Fiji that a lot of the other places like Cook Islands don't have. And it's sort of this, it's sort of an Indo-Fijian culture. You get the Fijian people, the indigenous folk, but you also had some people come over in the history that were, you know, some Chinese people and some people from India. And so there's this interesting mix of cultures happening in Fiji, and it affects not just the religion and the temples that you'll see, it affects the cuisine. And it makes for a very interesting multicultural society in the middle of the South Pacific, which you don't always expect. Obviously, they have the great resorts there that, you know, the Intercontinental and other things, but there's a lot of boutique places too, family-run places. In fact, the majority of places to stay in Fiji, it's going to be going to the pocket of someone who either owns it or is from, you know, part of the community, which I think really important. And we don't really mention it in what we write, but next year they're going to be airing Survivor's 50th season. For the last, 10, 12 years or so, Survivor has been filmed in Fiji northwest coast of this main island that we're talking about. And in the off season, when they're not shooting, there are tours. You can go and see the areas where they film Survivor. But if you're there between mid-April and mid-July, that's when they're filming 51 and 52 next year. But if you're a Survivor fan, you already know Fiji very well.
Yeah.
I can't believe they've had 50 seasons. My Lord.
They do two a year and plus.
Oh, okay. I remember when it started. Oh, God.
And I remember also, Jason, when you and I were both working for Budget Travel Magazine, Fiji had some political unrest that made it a no-go zone. But I think it's important to say it's fully peaceful once again. It's not a place you have to worry about anymore.
Yeah, it was one of those coups that didn't destroy the country, that they just sort of reorganized and went forward. It happened during, I think, one of the seasons, productions of Survivor even. So that does happen from time to time, but that's not unusual among smaller countries. They just sort of regroup and things happen again. And the tourists were never in danger because these people know very well that tourism is the lifeblood of Fiji and nobody wants to destroy that.
Yeah. All right.
But it's fine now, as you're saying. Yeah.
Yes. Moving from a little country to a huge one. I'm talking about the United States. It is our 250th birthday. And there are going to be celebrations across the United States. And this was a tricky one to write about because, unfortunately, some of the celebrations, it looks like, are becoming quite partisan and have less to do with history than they do with current events. However, people have been planning for this since well before the current moment. And we have a lot of historians and civic leaders of small towns and cities who are putting on what should be historically accurate, joyous, nonpartisan celebrations. So, for example, in Boston, they are redoing the Freedom Trail to bring in more stories from women and from indigenous people. both Colonial Williamsburg and Mount Vernon, a home of George Washington in Virginia, are coming up with brand new ways of telling the stories they tell so well about the Revolutionary Era period and the period right after that. So lots of exciting things in Virginia. New York City is always has a great fireworks display. And now we have two really great local history museums. There is the New York Historical, and that's the name, which I hate. It used to be the New York Historical Society, but they lopped off society. So now it's the New York Historical
It's not the New York
Grammatical. Kind of leaves you hanging.
Yeah. It's just weird. Anyway, they still do a good job, and they're going to have a whole year's worth of really intelligent exhibitions on things like women's roles during the revolution. They'll have revolutionary artifacts. They'll have a lot to see and do there. The second museum is the Museum of the City of New York, and it's mounting a 7,000 square foot exhibition about the British occupation of New York City during the war, which was quite a dramatic time. The colonists purposefully burned down Trinity Church, because that was the tallest building in the city, and it was a landmark, and they knew without that church, it would be harder for the British to find their way around. So they purposefully burnt it down. So lots of drama, lots of interest in those stories. And apparently, rumor has it that Hamilton, the Broadway musical, is going to be doing something special, but we don't know what yet. I'm thinking they're going to add tap dancing to the show.
It's about time.
That would be revolutionary.
Right. And you have, and of course, Philadelphia will be doing a lot of things, but you also have cities that weren't in the original colonies that are also launching 250th celebrations, like at Epcot and at Disney California Adventure. They're doing a new version of Soaring, or Soarin', right? Because it's a...
Soarin'.
Drop the G during flight.
Right. So how would you describe Soarin'? What is Soarin'?
It's grandma's favorite ride. It's you basically sit on a bench and then you're lifted up in front of a screen and it feels like you're flying on a hang glider with beautiful smells and wind and stuff. Everybody loves it.
And you see different parts of California, but now you're going to see
California. Then they did a version of places all around the world, but they're doing a third new version, a brand new one that hasn't been revealed or hasn't been shown yet. And you were going to describe that. That's for next year.
Right. And that's going to be all the top places of the United States.
I'm sure Disney will be one of them because they always end in Disney. Yeah.
And Branson, Missouri is going to try and set a Guinness Book of World Records because, they're Branson, Missouri. They're going to try and display the most flags ever displayed in one destination. I'm not sure if that's a reason to go, but it's kind of interesting. And Wyoming is going to have statewide what they're calling historic reflections, like an indigenous audio tour of the Wind River Canyon and a traveling exhibit of Western craftsmanship from the Cowboy Trades Association. Did you know there was a Cowboy Trades Association? And what do you think they specialize in? Spurs?
Good question. Making, I don't know, beans over a fire? I don't know.
What are the cowboy trades besides... you know, wrangling cows.
Cattle rustling?
I don't know. Anyway.
You know what I find really cool and interesting is a lot of these exhibitions and plans that are being made are commemorating history. They're about the revolution that began everything and why we decided that a revolution was necessary. You're seeing that common thread among many of the things that are being announced for the 250th. So I think a lot of Americans are going to learn for the very first time about the roots of their country and how it was established.
Absolutely. A government of the people, for the people, as I think Lincoln said, was at the core of our founding. And relearning the history at this particular time, I think, is a very, very important exercise. So
you're going to do a job that schools haven't done a great, great job in civics classes lately. People are going to be learning through these celebrations instead.
Yeah. So I'm actually really happy these celebrations are happening next year. I think the timing couldn't be better. And on that note, we will say stay tuned for the final destinations that you should go to next year. We will talk about those next week. Thank you so much, Zach and Jason.
Thanks, Pauline.
All right, that's it for this week's show. I thank you so much for listening. To those who are traveling, may I offer you a hearty bon voyage.
Watching cable, well, it feels so far away. All the channels seem the same. Trying to remember all the songs we like to play, 'cause those lazy afternoons don't come so frequently these days. Oh, it's been so long, and I cannot help but wonder, are you ever coming home? I like you with your sour candy in the boathouse on the lake. Oh, but I hate the way it takes.
Luxury flights and hotels can be had for free. The world of points and miles sounds too good to be true, but it's actually real, but only if you know what you're doing.
On Frequent Miler on the Air, Greg and I'm Nick, discuss all the ways to earn points and miles and use them for outsized value.
Join us every Friday for our full episodes and every Tuesday for our quick, single-topic coffee break episodes.
See you there.
Hi, I'm David Brody, co-host of the Travel in 10 podcast. Together, myself and my co-host, Tim Johnson, have traveled to over 150 countries around the world and all seven continents. Now we're sharing our favorite places, some of our best tips and experiences from all around the world in just 10 minutes on Travel in 10. Join us at voyescape.com.